Can we just give a hand for our worship team? What a beautiful gift. Yeah. When I heard we might be in the amphitheater, I was a little bit scared. I don't know if you know this, but that place is a little wild and unpredictable. I kid you not, this summer, I was here for Family Camp 1, and I was just sitting quietly listening to Todd and our speaker speak together, and out of nowhere, this crazy, deranged chipmunk came and ran into my leg, I'm not kidding, and bounced off of me and, like, ran up onto the stage and left. And I thought I just went like, oh, but I guess I screamed really loudly, and it, like, anyway. And I'm a little softer than I used. Is it okay? All right. Anyway, so before we get started, let's just pray. Dear Jesus, thank you for every woman who is here tonight. I know it's your plan, and it's such a gift. And thank you, God, that you are the giver of all good things. So I pray that we each can see that, experience that, praise you for that tonight. And I just ask, God, that you can just help me say what you would like me to say, and that all the women would be blessed by this weekend. Amen. So many winters ago, I volunteered to be a chaperone for my son Isaac's field trip. And if we were going to the Milwaukee Domes. Now, if you're not familiar with the domes, they are three glass beehive-shaped domes. The base of them, the diameter is around 140 feet in diameter, and they're 85 feet high, offering 15,000 square feet of growing space for plants. There's a show flower dome, a desert dome, and my personal favorite, the tropical dome. Well, on the day of the field trip, the weather was forecasted to be exceptionally cold and exceptionally windy, and winter is not my favorite thing. So as I rode on the school bus with a bus full of boisterous fourth graders, I looked out the window, and all I saw were gray skies, snowy roads, slush-filled cars, all these things. Everything was gray and white. So when we arrived at the domes, this was our view. This is kind of what they looked like. So I stepped down off the bus and was greeted with a gust of icy wind. I pulled my winter cap down, tucked my coat around me, hustled the boys inside, and then we walked into the lobby, and they led us down a hallway where we shed all our winter gear. So my cheeks were still red and my fingers still numb, but when I stepped through these glass doors into the tropical dome, everything winter melted away. Everything was lush and green, and the air was warm. It was 80 degrees and humid in all the best ways. There were tropical birds, I kid you not, flying over palm trees, singing their happy song, and everything was just beautiful. So as I walked through the dome, this is what it looked like in the tropical dome. It still does. As I walked through the dome, winter was momentarily forgotten. I was in a lush, green, full of life, summertime sanctuary. Never before had I experienced such an extreme shift from winter right into summer. It felt so peaceful and so restorative. So this summer, I was studying the book of Exodus, and as I was reading it, I thought, gosh, it kind of seems like they're in their own personal winter, and that they were in desperate need of a sanctuary as well. They had been slaves to the Egyptians. They lived in Egypt during those 10 plagues, you know, like swarming with locusts, frogs everywhere, deranged chipmunks. Just kidding, that actually was. And, I mean, they were there when the Nile was turned to blood, right? Like, they were there too. And then they had this narrow escape from the Egyptians, which was a bit of a nail biter, I'm sure. And they were, I'm sure, just so stressed out. So as I was thinking of this, God opened up some things to me that I'm going to share with you tonight. So if you'd like to follow along, I'm going to start in Exodus 14, starting in verse 29. And I'm just going to go through some of the parts of the middle of Exodus. So it starts with Exodus 14, 29 through 31. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and Moses his servant. So the Israelites, after that had happened, were about to start their trek through the desert where God was going to lead them to the land that he had promised to them. But first, Moses and Miriam paused to sing a song of praise to the Lord. And this is where Exodus 15 picks up. So to summarize a few of the things, the song of praise was like singing about the miracle that happened in the Red Sea and how it parted. And then Moses also sang about the Lord and how he was their strength, their song, their salvation. And Moses sang of the Lord's unfailing love and power. And then he, in verses 17 through 18, Moses sang this: "You will bring them in and plant them on the mountain of your inheritance, the place, O Lord, you made for your dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, your hands established. The Lord will reign forever and ever." So this is the first place that sanctuary is mentioned in the Bible. And sanctuary means a consecrated, sacred place. And then as years have gone on, it also has come to mean a place of refuge and protection. So that is how Exodus 15 begins, this beautiful song praising the Lord for all these miracles that had just happened and talking about how God will plant the Israelites in a sanctuary where he dwells. I just feel like, what a beautiful image. Doesn't that feel like stepping out of this harsh winter into a beautiful, life-giving sanctuary? But then, as we look further into Exodus 15, there's a transition which is marked in my Bible by this heading in bold print: complaining in the desert. I just remember like that jumping off the page to me, like, what happened? This amazing thing just happened in the whole beginning of chapter 15. They were just praising the Lord and singing songs, and then all of a sudden there's complaining happening. So in Exodus 15, 22, it says, "For 3 days they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was bitter." So the Israelites had 3 days of struggle. They were really thirsty, but the thirst made them quickly forget all the miracles that the Lord had just done for them. Then a little bit further into the trip, we see this in chapters 16, verses 2 through 3. "In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, 'If only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death.'" Even after experiencing all those miracles, they didn't realize that they could experience God's goodness, peace, and love, and God's sanctuary right where they were. So as we get a little further into Exodus, in chapter 24, Moses met with the Lord on Mount Sinai. That's where he received the stone tablets where all the laws were written for the Israelites. And then in chapters 25 through 31, that's where the Lord started giving directions for the building of the tabernacle. So tabernacle means to sit or to dwell. So God wanted his people to understand that he wanted to be with them, even as they traveled through the desert. So in Exodus 25:8, the Lord tells them to make a sanctuary. He said, "Then have them make a sanctuary for me, and I will dwell among them." Remember, a sanctuary means a consecrated, sacred place. The Latin root sanct means holy, which makes sense here, because in the sanctuary, it's referring to the Holy of Holies. So it's the smaller part of the tabernacle. It's the innermost part of the tabernacle where the Ark of the Testimony was kept. And inside that were the stone tablets that had the laws that the Lord had given to Moses. And as you can see in there, there was like that dividing veil, a curtain that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the tabernacle. And the high priest could only enter it once a year with a blood offering for the people's sins. And so it was really set apart. I wonder, though, if the Israelites had realized how truly incredible that it was the Lord, the Holy Lord, who was set apart, who never made a wrong decision, if they would understand that he was with them, he was creating this tabernacle so that he could symbolize and show them that he wanted to be with them every step of the way, I wonder if they would have had a different response. I wonder if instead of this collective grumbling and complaining, if their song would have been one of praise and thanksgiving instead. So what can we learn from these chapters in Exodus? So there's a couple things that I have just been reflecting on from reading this. The first thing is, we can remember what the Lord has already done for us. In Exodus 15, a song of praise and thanksgiving, after 3 days of struggle, quickly turned to complaint. How quickly the Israelites forgot all these crazy miracles that they just experienced. But I've been thinking, how quickly do I forget too? All too often when people are like, hey, how was your week? I'm like, I remember, oh yeah, I didn't sleep well that night because, you know, I'm like getting old now and I can't sleep well at night all the time. Or I might say, yeah, this bad thing happened at work, or man, I'm really struggling with one of my kids right now. Or, you know, I think of the complaints and the grumbling. And I just wonder if there would be a way that I could capture more of the good things that the Lord is doing so I can remember. A few times throughout the week, my Google Photos will bring back memories of, like, you know, a year ago, 5 years ago, 8 years ago. And I'll look through these photos and I'll be like, oh my God, I remember that nice time. Like, that's when my kids were so sweet. I mean, they're still sweet, but anyway, I'll remember it. And I'll look at the photograph and I'll share it with somebody else who was a part of it, or text it to them, and then we'll tell the story of that time. And I think, oh gosh, I need to start doing that more in my life with the Lord. My cousin actually every day writes 5 things in this journal that she's thankful for, and some are small and some are big, but it's like such a big deal. And because she can tell me the good things that has happened. And I keep thinking, oh, I should do that. But, you know, I haven't started yet. But I still do, like, write things in a journal, or I have a notes app in my phone that I just have one titled Jesus, which is not super creative, but it's like where I capture things, you know, where it's like, oh, I heard the Lord say this. This was him, you know, or I read this verse, or I'm thankful for this, and I jot things down. And I just wonder if all of us would do that, and we could remind each other of the good things and share that, if our hearts would be more prone to thanksgiving and praise, if we captured it more often. Another thing we can learn from this passage in Exodus is to consider the voices that are influencing us. So several years ago, a missionary came to our church named Tom Atwater, and he shared this with me, and it made a huge impact. So he talked about the different kinds of voices that influence us. So one of the voices is your own voice. So your own voice, he had shared, is egotistical. It's about yourself. Like, what do I want? What are my plans? What do I want to wear? How do I look in that photo? And if you think it's not true, whenever you see a photo, think, who's the first person you look for is yourself, right? How did I look in that? Anyway, so that's your own voice. Another voice that is competing for our attention is the world's voice. The world's voice is oozing with discontentment. It tells us we deserve more, that we shouldn't have any boundaries. No one should hold us back. Just take a quick walk through Hobby Lobby. No, I actually really like this store. Read all the plaques, and you'll see, like, the messages that are out there, like, follow your heart. I'm like, don't follow your heart. What does the Bible say? It's like the root of all evil. Or my personal, like, not favorite is, you got this, which I know people love saying that, but and Emily and Anne actually know I don't like that saying at all, so they say it to me all the time, like, every time we talk about the talk, she's like, you've got this. Because during COVID, that was the first time I heard it, and I'm a teacher, and people at work kept saying, you've got this, and I was like, no, I don't got this. That's why we're all here. This is why I'm, like, teaching children on a computer screen. We don't got this. Anyway, I'm like, the Lord got this, you know. Anyway, but if you say that, it's okay. My mom actually just texted me this morning, you've got this, Denise. I'm like, what? I don't. Anyway, I love her. She's great. So another voice is Satan's voice. Satan's voice brings accusation, fear, shame, isolation. Satan is a jerk, and I actually have more words for him that I learned from Emily on our backpacking trips. But I feel like I would get in trouble seeing them up here. But seriously, I think, like, if there are mean thoughts that you think, wow, a really mean person would say, if a person said that to me, that would be so mean and hurtful. Like, that's not from the Lord. That's from Satan. Or if you have something where you're, like, at peace or calm and out of nowhere, all of a sudden there's a fearful thought or, like, something of shame, that is from Satan. That is not from the Lord. And we just need to be more discerning of, like, wow, what is that? What is going on in my mind here? And then, of course, another amazing voice is the Lord's voice. God's voice always matches Scripture, and his voice brings peace and love. His voice is always gentle, even when he's saying really, really hard things. His voice is gentle. His voice is restorative. His voice is like walking into a sanctuary. So let's say we guard ourselves against all these things and the voices of the world. We're really in tune to the voices of Satan. We surround ourselves with Christian friends. We listen to Christian music. When we walk through Hobby Lobby, we squint at those weird plaques that say things that aren't true. And we only read the ones with Bible verses on. You know, like, this is all good. But are we relying on other voices to tell us about God? So I was blessed to grow up within a few miles of each of my grandparents. But even though we were close in proximity, I had a very different relationship with each of my grandmas. One of my grandmas knew about me. She knew about me from my mom. My mom would tell her things about my life, so she knew the sports I was in. She knew what grade I was in school. She knew my birthday because it was on her anniversary, which she always told me on her birthday. So I'd be like, happy anniversary, Grandma. Anyway. She even knew about some of my driving because she was also a bus driver, and there were two-way radios, and one time there may have been like a time where, and I swear it was a passing zone, but I passed three buses on the way to school, and she thought it was a no-passing zone, and it was fine. Anyway, so she knew things about me, but everything she knew about me was secondhand from other people. And then my other grandma was entirely different. She spent regular time talking with me, asking me questions, listening to me. She was the secretary at my middle school, so she knew my comings and goings. She knew that I loved cheerleading magazines, so she'd collect them all and keep them for me. She knew all my favorite snacks. It just felt like very known by her. So my first grandma knew me from commentary from other people, and my other grandma knew me by just spending time with me all the time. So I'm not saying, like, there's something wrong with listening to Christian music or reading Christian books. Please do not, like, don't get me wrong, and I feel like it's a little risky saying this at a women's retreat, but I just think, like, if you're not actually reading the Bible directly yourself, you're missing out on something. And so I just want to encourage you, still buy Michelle's books, by the way. And I own, actually, quite a few of them myself. So again, don't hear me wrong. But I just think there is a blessing in just reading the Bible directly and letting the Lord speak to you. He can speak to you through that. So I just want to encourage you in that. So another thing we can learn from the Israelites is to be honest. To be honest with ourselves and to be honest with him. The Israelites were really struggling, but it appears, instead of being honest with themselves and God about their sins and their struggles, they grumbled to each other instead. They just turned sideways and complained and grumbled about God. So this winter, I was not doing well. I was feeling stretched thin and burned out by a series of not great choices. I was eating poorly. I was staying up too late. I was watching too much TV. I was not sleeping well, and I decided to do a food cleanse because I just wasn't feeling physically well. So I did a food cleanse for a week, and at the end of the week, it just so happened that there was a prayer retreat. And so I went to that prayer retreat, and as we prayed and praised the Lord, I started to cry, like super messy, embarrassing, messy cry. It was a thing. Yeah. Anyway, it was quite the thing. But in that, I realized, like, I did not just need a physical cleanse. There was junk in my heart that I needed to be honest about, and I needed to be honest with the people who were there, and I needed to be honest with myself about it. You know, I feel like sometimes we can just be like, oh, that's not real, that's not a thing. I'm just going to tuck it away. But at that time, the Lord was able to just show me, like, this is your junk. Let's talk about it. Like, let's not pretend it's not there. And I think God just really desires for that kind of honesty. Dr. John Sarno is a doctor and a researcher who wrote about some people who experience chronic physical pain need to learn to feel their unfeelable feelings and think their unthinkable thoughts in order to heal from the pain. Unspoken stress, sin, anxiety, and fear manifest in your body and in your mind and in your heart. Believe me, I know about this. I've experienced this. And again, God desires for us to be honest with ourselves and to be honest with Him. God desires for us to say what He already sees. He already sees all of it. Like, let's just say it out loud to Him. Why not talk to Him about it directly? The psalmist did it so well. So if you want to know how to start, like, it's a great starting point, is reading the Psalms. And just talk to Him about directly and be honest with Him so He can start to speak into those messy parts of our lives. I wonder if each of the Israelites individually would have turned to the Lord and just talked to Him and been like, you know what, Lord, this really stinks. I'm thirsty, the water's bitter, this is hard, this is not what I anticipated for it to be. I wonder if something would have turned out differently. Maybe they would have realized just how deeply He loves them and how He was going to help them every step of the way. I wish I could say that the story of the Israelites had turned out differently, but the struggle continued throughout the Old Testament. God spoke through various prophets, calling His people to turn from their sin and to return to Him, urging them to remember all the good things that He had done and longing for them to know Him and worship Him. But His people continued to go their own way. The tabernacle eventually became a permanent structure in the form of a temple, but because of the disobedience of the Israelites, it was hopelessly corrupt and eventually was destroyed. And then the nation of Israel did not hear from the Lord for over 400 years. And then God revealed His great plan of love. Jesus came to be the true tabernacle, to be the true temple, to be God with us. He came to tear down that curtain that was between the Holy of Holies and us so we could have direct access to the Lord and His deep, deep love for us. So in Hebrews 6, 19 through 20, it says, "We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. It enters the inner sanctuary behind the inner curtain, where Jesus, who went before us, has entered on our behalf." Isn't that such a beautiful gift? Without Jesus, we are stuck outside in an eternal winter. And even with Him, we will still feel the icy winds chill us to the bone. I don't know what your personal winters have been like or what they are like right now or what they will be. I cannot speak to that. And I am not in any way ever making light of that in your life. But I do know that with Jesus, we have a sanctuary and a refuge that is a safe place to go in the thick of any kind of storm. So we have access to Him in the nourishing, lush, green life that comes from being in His presence. We have access to all these good things that are already inside of us, this huge gift from the Lord. So how do we make sure we are spending time in His presence? This is an area where the Lord is continuing to grow and to grow me and to help me. As I already said before, just spending time directly in His Word so we can hear from Him is such a huge thing. And if this feels hard and intimidating, invite a friend to do it with you. The first time I ever read through the Bible in a year, which I think was actually like 15 or 16 months, I did it with two other friends. I would have never done it on my own. And we were able to talk about like the things that we were reading together and what the Lord was saying to us, and it was a really cool thing. Another thing that you can do is just create rhythms that allow you to spend time with him. In his book, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, John Mark Comer encourages us to be an apprentice of Jesus, to take on his lifestyle, to sit with God in the quiet, to enjoy the Father's company. He offers ideas of silence and solitude, Sabbath and simplicity. So again, if you're like me, this kind of list and this kind of life might feel a little bit intimidating, doing things like solitude and Sabbath and simplicity. But when something is overwhelming, find an entry point and start really small. My friend Shelly and I regularly go on runs together, and I must say my runs are not what they used to be when I was like this springy, fit 30-something year old. But every time we run, we say this to each other, no run is a bad run. No run is a bad run. Even if we have to walk on a run or whatever, no run is a bad run. And it's true that even though I'm not running as fast or as far as I used to when I was in my 30s, every time I go, I still feel encouraged and I feel still feel strong, and I'm growing in strength and endurance. So I think the same goes for spending time with God. No run's a bad run. No time with God is a bad time with God. Every time you spend any time with him, he's going to bless it, and he's going to use that accumulated time you spend with him to give you unexpected strength and encouragement. So speaking of runs, a little over 2 years ago, I was going on a run when I felt like something broke in my back. It was so sudden and unexpected. I had to stop, and that's very unusual. I'm like very much like push through the pain, you know, kind of thing. And I couldn't. I had to stop and drag my left leg home. It was so severe and sudden. And that was the beginning of the worst 10 months of my life. I was in so much pain. I couldn't sit, and I couldn't lay. I couldn't stand still. And all I could do was pace back and forth, and it would kind of lessen it a little bit. But if I paced too much, then it was horrible. When you experience chronic pain, if you ever have, it doesn't just hang out in the place where you were injured. It seeps into every part of your body. It settles into your mind, and it shows in the lines on your face, and it's exhausting. I had so many kind, sweet, loving family and friends come around me, pray for me, pray with me, pray for the Lord to heal me again and again. And everyone hoped that the Lord would heal me. And I spent many, many sleepless nights pleading for the Lord to do that. The following spring, the severity of my back and leg pain lessened enough that my husband and I decided to go on a trip to Mexico with some friends. But I was pretty worried about it. I thought, gosh, that's a long plane trip. I haven't sat that long in months. Like, will that just like make my back pain even worse? I don't know what the beds are going to be like. Will I be able to sleep? Will I even enjoy this vacation? But we ended up going. So when we arrived at the resort, we threw our stuff in a room and headed down to the beach for our first glimpse of the ocean. I walked down the stone steps, tossed my flip-flops in the sand, and walked straight out to the water barefooted. And it had been many years since I'd seen the ocean in person. So when I was walking up to the water, I was expecting to see like the ocean in like the blue, the one kind of blue that you see in like all the postcards, and that's like on the screensaver on my laptop. But as I lifted my face to the water, the Lord showed me something new. The ocean wasn't blue. It was like 1,000 blues. And then when I looked at the water that was washing up over my feet, it was clear. And in that moment, the Lord spoke to me in his kind and gentle way. He said, "You want me to be one blue, Denise. You want me to be one blue, but I'm so many more blues than you can ever imagine." And I had wanted the Lord to be one kind of blue. I wanted him to heal my physical pain. That's all I wanted from him at that time. But in that moment, I realized the Lord wanted to do a different kind of healing in my life. That was the start of something new for me. I had spent many months thinking about the Lord being just one blue, one way, the healer of my pain, so peace could be restored in my life. but he was about to show me new shades of blue and colors I couldn't even imagine, because he's a complex, holy, beautiful God. He was going to invite me into his sanctuary and show me a different kind of healing and a different kind of peace. So peace is defined as being free from war and free from disturbance. But the word peace in the Bible is defined differently. In the Old Testament, the word, Hebrew word for peace is shalom. Shalom is not just the absence of war or hardship, but it's the presence of something better in its place. Shalom refers to something complex with a lot of pieces that's in the state of completeness. Shalom refers to taking what is out of place and restoring it to wholeness. Isaiah 9, 5 through 6 refers to Jesus when it says, "He will be called Prince of Peace, and there will be no end of peace." But the actual meaning reads like this: "He will be called Prince of Shalom, and there will be no end of shalom." Jesus didn't come just to bring peace, to have like the absence of war and disturbances in our life. He came to bring shalom to each of us. He came to take what is broken and incomplete and restore it to wholeness. We are going to experience pieces being out of place again and again and again. Anyone feel like a piece or two out of place today? I do, like every day, all day long. You know, there's another little piece out of place, another one. You know, but Jesus is there inviting us into his sanctuary, waiting to take what is out of place in us and restore us to wholeness once again. This summer, as I was spending time with Jesus, I was imagining him sitting right up next to me. We're in this like little sanctuary together. I imagine these kinds of things because it just brings me into a peaceful place with him. And as I was doing this, I wrote this prayer: "Jesus, weed out sin, doubt, and confusion, and plant new truths in my heart. Help me to be deeply rooted in you and your love." This is my prayer for you too: that you would step out of your winter and enter into his sanctuary with Jesus again and again and again. That you would know his voice, that you would acknowledge his goodness, that you would be honest with him about your junk, that he would clear up any doubt and confusion and continually plant his truths. I pray his love would root down deep in your heart. And so tonight I pray this from Ephesians 3:17, that Christ would make his home in your hearts as you trust in him, and that your roots would grow down into God's love and keep you strong. Thank you.